Really not an alcoholic. I'm suffering from Al-Anon brutality. But I'm here today for the grace of God, you people in this wonderful Procol Bay, and I have not found it necessary to take a drink today. For that, I'm grateful. You know, our speaker, I've heard his tape, and I've heard a sponsor of mine talk about him quite a bit. When I called him on the phone to talk, he said he had one more talk left in him. I said, God knows, save it, man. We need it. So we had to change the date of the intergroup dinner. And so when I called him back, he said, well, give me a few minutes, Bo. Let me check my schedule book. And I said, you know, I just sat there on pins and needles knowing that he'd come back and said, I can't make it. But he said, yep, I can make that one too. So it worked out real good. Now, the speaker that will, was going to be really introduced by someone else today. He couldn't be here, but he asked me to talk to our speaker about his rules of conduct. And when I started to talk to him a few minutes ago about that, he readily told me about the guy that was going to introduce him in so good of terms that I didn't get to that point. So I'm not going to take up his time, and I know we're in for a treat, and I've heard him, and I know you'll enjoy him, and he walks like he talks. So you help me welcome Bill W. from Dublin, Georgia.
You know, it's a great privilege and a pleasure to be here. Oh, by God, I wouldn't be here. Now, I tell you, it's hot out there on that highway. And when you stop out here at Helen's Flea Market and sit in a hot car for about 15 or 20 minutes, It gets hot, I tell you now. But you know, Miss Sarah here, yeah, I'm glad I saw her. I'm glad I met her. They tell me that I done a little research work on her after I found out that she was going to introduce me. Have charge of the program. And it seems that she waited up one night while her daughter come in back a few years ago, and the girl was courting, and she came in and she was crying, and Sarah said, what on earth is the matter? Did that boy insult you? She said, no, mother, nothing like that. He's a fine boy, as far as I know. Says, but he didn't insult me. Says, you just don't understand. She said, well, I do understand that he's handsome. He's good looking. He's healthy. He's got a good job. And he's well thought of in the neighborhood. Why would you break an engagement with him? She says, Mama, you just don't understand. Says, he's an atheist. He don't believe in hell. And Sarah looked at her, smiled, you know, and she says, that's all right, honey. Says, you marry him and we'll show him. You know, that kind of sounds like Sarah, don't it? She might have been like the little girl that come in with a first date with the boy. And she said, her mother, however, said, honey, you got your lipstick all smeared. You let that boy kiss you on your first date? She said, well, Mama, it was a highway sign that caused it. She said, what do you mean, highway sign that caused you to let him kiss you? She said, well, Mother, we were riding along, and he sneaked his arm around me. And I made him push it back up on the seat. And said, after a while, he got it down again. I wasn't conscious of it, and said, we were riding along talking, and all of a sudden, that sign, the highway sign, loomed up there right in front of me, and said he parked right in front of that sign, and said he reached down and got me and kissed me right smack on the lips. And the mother said, why on earth, what do you mean? What kind of sign was it? She said, what did it say? She said, Mama, it said, yield right away. So we have, I was going to tell this about the fat lady, and on the elevator. But I ain't seen no elevator since I got here. So I can't tell it on that. But it seems that this girl was riding on the elevator with her daddy. And this rather stout lady was pressed up above. They just come in and come in and come in until they pressed very tightly in the elevator, and all of a sudden they got down the stairs and they stepped off the floor, and this woman, she took her purse, her pocketbook, in other words, her satchel, I call it when I look at my wife, and she just swung it right around her head and smacked this girl's daddy right beside the head. She says, that'll teach you. And the man looked at it. He was shocked. He was flabbergasted. He didn't know what in the hell had happened. And the little girl looked up at her daddy. He said, Daddy, I don't like her either. She stepped on my foot in the elevator, and I pinched her. So they were, and I forget about one thing. I told it over in Columbus one night, and there was a bunch of people in there that I knew, and I kept looking at them all the time I was talking, and I give them the general idea, the crowd, the general idea that I had had actually overheard the conversation. And it seems that the whole crowd centered their attention on this group of people. And I said, boy, I overheard the conversation, said, boy, where you been? I ain't seen you in a long time. He said, no. He said, I've been off and gotten married, boy. He said, sure enough. He said, well, that's good. He said, well, it ain't too good. He said, she's ugly. And he said, well, that is bad. He said, well, it ain't too bad. He said, she's rich. And said, well, that's good. That's good. He said, that ain't too good. He said, she's stingy. And he said, well, now that's bad. He said, that is bad. He said, well, it ain't so bad. She bought me a house. And he said, well, that's wonderful. That's good. That's good. He says, it ain't too good. The house burned down. And he said, man, that is bad. He said, well, it ain't too bad. She was in it. You know, The little story teaches us a moral lesson. We all want to be made comfortable. We want a beautiful wife. We want a rich wife. We want a nice house. And I don't know whether in his seeking of comfort he arrived at the destination or not, but we never reach satisfaction. We never do. I'm going to tell what Bo didn't tell about Courtney M. Might as well call his damn name. I said Courtney, they all look for it to come out. But anyway, old Courtney, back in the heyday, I call it his heyday because he ain't been worth a damn ever since. I love him. I wouldn't talk about him if I didn't love him. But old Courtney was gonna cook him a chicken one night. So he bought a great big old handsome game rooster. And he cleaned the rooster. He put him in the pot. And all of a sudden, he just hit on an idea that he would pour into that pot the following ingredients. 1 pint of Canadian Club, 1 pint of Bacardi rum, 1 pint of brandy, 1 pint of sherry, and 1 pint of a mixture. And he said, well, let's go sit down and talk while the rooster's cooking. And said, then we have the rest of it already fixed up of the supper. And old Courtney said, come on in. And I asked him about it later on. And Courtney, I asked him, I said, Courtney, what did the rooster taste like with all that conglomeration of alcohol and vermouth and everything else in there? He said, Bill, that's a funny thing. I never did taste it. He said, the damn fool got up and walked out of the oven and tried to hit me for a membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. So much for that, the foolishness. You know, I've learned one thing that in about AA, that you can get by with just so much. Now, that's foolishness. And you got to talk. You got to talk serious. Now, I haven't made as many talks in the last 5 years as I have in the last 29. Before that, I've been sober 34 years. And he was supposed to tell what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. Well, what it's like now so far overshadows what it was like. And what happened I didn't realize what was happening all them 34 years until this morning. I woke up. And I reached over and I patted her on the shoulder. And I said, "Shirley, I love you." And, you know, it all became a culmination of one day at a time. 34 years, and last April the 10th, I walked out of the barroom. I went in the presence of two men, and went into a dim lit 24-hour club in the city of Dublin on Madison Street, Skid Row, and I was a resident of that row, of that Skid Row. We went together upstairs, as I said, to a dimly lit room. And somehow, the boy that was up there the other day, after a dozen slips, but he's got 2 or 3 years now. He lives in Atlanta. He wrote me a letter, and he enclosed a check for the 24-hour club for $25. And he said, first to start off with, "Bill, I love you, but I love AA more than I love you," as expressed by the check. And he gave them. But now that boy was up there that night. He had carried me over to Augusta, to Columbia, South Carolina, to the Carolina Rest Home, to the other places all over Georgia, until the money give out. And the money give out, and he was carrying me over there, just furnishing the transportation, and my brother was trying to pay for me. And he also gave up. And they ceased operations about saving and salvation of Bill White. So I kind of want to tell a little yarn that fits it. It's Uncle Remus type yarn. It seems that Uncle Remus was sitting there one day, and he saw a rabbit and a frog going down the trail, the forest trail. And Uncle Remus, he had the peculiar ability to understand animal language. So he listened in on the conversation. And the rabbit said, "Little frog, let's cut across here and save about a mile and a half, 2 miles over down to the other side of the swamp." And he said, "All right." So they hadn't got but a trail, a yard or two in the trail. So when the little frog fell in the hole, and he tried to get out, he tried to crawl out, to jump out, to clamber out, any way in the world he could get out, but the little frog couldn't get out. So the rabbit sat down a minute and thought about it. He says, "Little frog," said, "I know that Brother Turtle across the swamp over yonder has got a ladder. And I'll run over there and get it and come back, and we'll get you out of this this hole. He said, because a varmint might come on. Somebody destroy you, kill you, in other words. So he said, all right, I can't get out, so you might as well go. So the rabbit run through the mile and a half swamp and run all the way back with that heavy ladder and it catching on every vine and every bush. So he got back. He looked down in the hole and the little friend, he said, oh my goodness alive, somebody has got my frog, my little buddy. And he said, no, they ain't. No, they ain't, Brother Rabbit. Said, look up here. And there, 10 foot from the hole, and 4 foot up on the stump, was the little frog. And he said, Brother Rabbit, so mad he couldn't see straight. He said, why in the world did you send for me all the way through that swamp and all the way back? When you lied to me all the time, you told me you couldn't get out of that hole, and hey, you are out. He says, yes, sir. But, Brother Frog, Brother Rabbit, I didn't lie to you. While you was gone, a snake, and I had to come out. While my brothers were disowning me, my church had forgotten me, my people didn't want me to come on the street, and I had lived underneath the warehouses and the trestle, the river bridge. I had to come out. There wasn't any way on God's green earth for me to live and live sane other than to come out. I had to make the decision one way in my life. I could either die comfortable, or if you call comfortable in DTs, screaming and hollering in the police station, and they didn't turn out right. I had lost my wife. I had lost my business. I had fairly good law practice at one time. I got a paper out there in the car I brought down here for Courtney to see, where they honored me last Tuesday night, was a week ago, with a dinner at the Country Club, August the 7th, 1930. They owe me 3 years on that decal. Henry up there. But anyhow, I had been a fairly good young lawyer. I call myself a promising young lawyer. I'd promise you any damn thing for a drink. Now, I'll tell you that. I represented people for murder, for rape, for burglary, driving drunk, but I was in the car with them. But the law didn't see me. That's just a smart trick I thought I was pulling then. At the same time, you know, it's a hell to get up here and tell this stuff on yourself. And it actually happened. Hell, I was sitting there in the courtroom, and the judge had a man charged with breaking and entering and stealing therefrom, burglary. And he said, Spet, who do you want to represent you? He said, have you got a lawyer? He said, no. He said, you got any money? No. And about that time, all the lawyers in the courtroom got out. Of course, at that time, that's 40 years ago, they didn't pay anybody to represent you for free, except the murder case. And he said, well, you're charged with stealing. He said, are you guilty or not guilty? He said, Judge, I ain't stole nothing from nobody. And he said, all right, who you want? He said, I want Mr. Bill. And he said, you can't have him now. He's prosecuting attorney. I said, Judge, I wish you'd excuse me from this case. You could get another district attorney, but I doubt if he's going to get another lawyer. Because I'm the only one representing for nothing. So he finally, he appointed one lawyer to say he's representing over him. And he says, Judge, I don't want him. He said, why? He said, because that's the man I stole the typewriter from. And you know, he went on and entered the plea of not guilty. Right there for the all them jurors and everything. But I'm just amazed that I'm alive. Now, I haven't talked very much tonight other than I lost my wife and I went to the hotel. From the hotel to the rooming houses. From the rooming houses to the flop houses. As the money depleted, the class of living also depleted. And anyway, I had a wonderful time. I imagine I did. I had as good a time as you did when drunk. Hell, I do. I know damn well I had as good a time as you all did. And I was a little bit hungry. And, you know, it's kind of hard to force food down when there ain't no food in there and you're drinking liquor to chase it with. And it just don't work. You know, I got into AA that night, April the 10th, 1949. And I'd rather talk about anything in the world except my trips to Milledgeville. Now, I didn't get sent up there. I didn't go there for treatment. I went there to help other people who had been in the same boat I was in. And first thing I know, I caught myself. When I got sober, I wanted to sober up everybody on God's green earth. And I insisted on it. And hell, I'd push at you and cuss you and talk about you. I was trying to delete alcoholism out of this world. And one night up there at Milledgeville, I was talking. I'd been there for 20 years. at night, every Wednesday night, 46 miles up there from Dublin. And I've been there near about every Wednesday night. And one night I got talked and I told a few jokes. And I laughed about it, laughed about myself. And I had gotten to where I could laugh at that time. And they said, don't leave. I said, wait a minute, we want to talk to you a minute. With all them patients out there, you know. And you know where I was? I was in Milledgeville at the state institution. And they said, Judge, we like it when you come up here. Said, last week, you wasn't here. And said, they had a man that was here. He was honestly aware of where he was, but he didn't know what he was talking about. Said he just didn't know. So I said, well, I appreciate the fact that you all like me well enough to listen to me. And he said, well, in fact, we like you better than anybody else ever comes up here. And I said, whoa. And now I'm human, you know. I began to get a little old pride, a little stick 'em up, you know, a big wheel. The other folks were bragging on me, you know. I said, and then I prayed hell. I asked them why they liked me so much. And they said, that's simple. They said, Judge, you're so much like us. You talk our language. And you speak our thoughts. And I had noticed on the elevator going up, there was a little placard on there, stuck on there with adhesive tape. And said, if you die on this elevator, press the up button. Now, you know the man that wrote that thing on there wasn't crazy. He wasn't crazy at all. But he had expressed my opinion, and therefore I had expressed their opinion. And we got along just fine. You know, it reminds me of a girl that had gotten raised up and got married, very poor circumstances, and they had a child. Raised the child up under the same circumstances. And they had tried to do the best they could for the child. And it didn't seem like that they were doing too much. And the girl, somebody had given the mother an evening gown. Brand new, sparkling evening gown, shiny, pretty. And it just caught that little girl's attention. And she says, Mama, wear it tonight. Wear it tonight. And she just insisted on it. She says, no, honey, that is a gift to be worn on special occasions. And says, when the ladies and gentlemen go out together. She says, well, Mama, couldn't you pretend Daddy was a gentleman for just this night? And I've seen those times when it almost took almost that much the balance of this girl. You know, I was sitting in a barroom one day. Part of these things I tell, I don't know whether they're true or not. I've been told a lot of it about my first wife, about other men's wives, and everything else that they told about me, and said I was sitting on the stool one day, and I said, burp. And this man and his wife sitting there next to me, he says, how dare you burp before my wife? And I said, I'm sorry. I didn't know it was your wife's turn to burp. So anyway, I don't know whether that's true or not. But anyway, we have a great, great deal of trouble. As I get older, remembering all the things that did happen, and I get them mixed up. But I'm telling you this, I read the newspaper put out by the periodical, rather, magazine, put out by entry that Reachable, and it was a beautiful thing. And over on the back of it, it says, people see sublime inspiration in the ruins of a great cathedral and see none in the ruins of a man. And I thought about it, and I wondered what he meant by it. And then all of a sudden I was confronted with a picture of my church. I'm a Methodist, and I was born in the Methodist church, and I was been a member of the Methodist church for 68 years there. And I just could see that church subject to a bomb, a great catastrophe, lightning, thunder, storm, fire, and just see it, all the people of the Methodist church and the other people in my neighborhood, in my town, and there's not too many there, but there's quite a few. And I could see them come up here the next morning and stand in front of the church and see the great pile of debris, junk, reduced to junk, rubble. And I said to myself, those people made millions of dollars to rebuild and refurbish. For the glory of God, they claim that church. They decide it's the heart of alcoholism. The people on the people who deserve, who are the help, attention. But a book that sounds crazy, they break by. There wouldn't be a light not involved in the other people. You know, I sent it back to church 4 years ago, I began to pick up the piece, and I put on had to speak citation to speak to author to call. Say, your name, say, move from over to Savannah, and been over there. But it's a strange thing. I went to Sunday school one morning, and I just pulled Sunday school, rather. I went down to the barber shop to get a shoe shine, and the old Negro shoe shine man. And he was my buddy, and I love him today. He still lives today. And he he got in a conversation with me and got to kidding me. And all of a sudden I realized it was time to be on the air to radio to teach Sunday school. So I said, excuse me, Ethan, I got to go. And I went around the corner and there was a taxi cab around there. I asked the taxi driver. I said, please carry me around to Best Methodist Church, will you? And he said, I got to be there. And he said, well, I'm sorry, I can't take any passengers now. I'm going to hear the judge talk. And I realized that it was me. And I reached in the pocket. And the only thing I had was a $5 bill. And I pulled it out. And he looked up about that time and saw that $5 bill. He said, the hell with the judge. Where you want to go? So he carried me out. But I ran for, of all the things in the world, I got in the income tax business and politics at the same time. And what I wanted to do was to protect my kind of people. So I ran for prosecuting attorney for a drunk court. Now, can you imagine that? I ran for solicitor of the state court where he prosecuted all the drunks. Then I found out that I'd rather judge those boys and girls. So we prosecuted them and we hung on to them. I never would get through with one. I just couldn't. And I didn't send but one man to the public work camp while in the 8 years I was solicitor. And then I got sorry for him and went out and got him the next day. And that wasn't for me. I wanted to be judge. I ran for judge, and I fooled the people. Must have. Anyway, they elected me. So I got to be judge of the state court. And while this time, I had a man in there that had been in there. He had 13 children. Had been married 15 years. He had 13 children. And he'd had a case in my court the 8 years I was solicitor, and the 2 years I had been judge. And he'd had it on every term of court. And I asked him one day while I was judge, Abram, why is it that your name appears on the calendar every term of court? And it is involved in liquor. It don't ever involve robbery, a burglary, a stealing. It just involves liquor. DUI, possession of liquor, walking drunk, driving drunk, possession of an apparatus to make it. Everything in the world involving liquor. And I want to know, how in the hell can I get rid of you out of my court? If I fine him, he'd get out and sell liquor to pay the fine. If I put him in the chain gang, I put 13 kids on the welfare. And the neighborhood. Because they don't eat now. So he looked up at me and he said, Judge, It ain't my fault that you ain't been promoted. And right there, he planted the seed of a promotion. So, 2 years later, I ran for circuit judge. And the good Lord and folks guided the folks over there to help me. And I got by with a little 6,000 majority. 4 years later, I ran for it without opposition. So, then my eyes began to fail me, and I'm still suffering from that same ailment. I can't see hardly anything other than I see the glory of a new day every morning. I see the bright star in the heavens. I can still see them. I can still see the future as if I don't take a drink. I can still see the future if I remain active, thanking God by accepting invitations to talk. I can still see. I dare not turn down anybody. I dare not attempt life itself. Drunk again. I might just get drunk, but I don't know that I have another sobriety in my system. You know, I kind of think, not my notes here, I can't see those notes, and it doesn't make any difference anyhow. But I remember the story I heard over here in Sylvester. I believe it was VW. I think it was. And she told the story of the man who was a wayfarer and got off the beaten track through the swamp. And he fell in a bed of quicksand. And he asked the man to come by. The first man to come by, of course, he hollered at him for help. And he said, and he was a Hindu. He said, I'm sorry, but I have got to go back to my village and tell my people to stay away from quicksand. He said, one of them might get in it while I'm talking to you and helping you. I'll just leave you. So, Mohammedan walked by, and he says, there is a great lesson here. There is a great moral lesson. To stay away from sin and degradation and the liquor. Alcoholism is a sin and a degradation to some people. But he said, I've got to go. And two or three other representatives of Confucian Muslim. One of them fellow says, I'm sorry, if it wasn't for the will of Allah, it wasn't the will of Allah that you would be here, you wouldn't be here. If it wasn't his will. Therefore, it is he'll be here, and if I violate his will, then he'll punish me. And finally, a member of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, came by. And he says, "Please help me." He's gotten up to about upper lip. Salvation then. And the man says, "Well, sure. Come. And I'll get you out." And he pulled him out. And he said, "Walk with me." And they walked together, safe and sound. They just didn't do. You know, I was going to tell on old Bo, but he'll understand it anyhow. He got loose from his lovely wife one night for a few days, and he went up to Philadelphia. And he said, when the train stopped, "Bo, you caught me." The train stopped, and he said, "Oh, hello there, Mr. Easy O'Kinzer. Said, we were expecting you." He said, No, I'm not. I'm Bo Welch. I'm from Albany, Georgia, and I am not Easy O'Kinzer. However, I do want to thank you for the compliment." And he gave him a quarter. And he grabbed his bag and carried him over to the taxi stand. And he said, "Oh, hello, Mr. Pender." So he decided he'd go along with it. He said, "Now, I'm really not Mr. Pender. I'm not Easy Old Pender. I am Bo Welch from down at Albany." He said, "However, here's a half a dollar." And he thanked him for this compliment, and the taxi took him on to the hotel. And then he noticed the big sign up there. Easy O'Kinzer was having a performance there that night. And they said, "Oh, Mr. Pender, we're glad to see you." The footman out in front of the hotel. And he carried him on. And he said, "Mr. Pender, we're so glad to see you." And he got him inside, and it was the same thing at the desk. And he got tired of that thing, you know, and he thought he was tired of it. And he got up to the room, and they had him the wedding suite. The real nice icing on the cake. And he said, now don't you start that Easy O'Kinzer stuff," to the bellhop. He said, "Now, I am not Easy O'Kinzer. I have gotten tired of it, of hearing it. Now, please," said, "here's a dollar bill. Just forget about it." And then he said, "Whoa." And right out there in the middle of the suite was a beautiful blonde-headed girl, a luscious-looking thing. And she's sitting out there on that sofa, you know, and she leaned back, she had her legs crossed, and she's fixing her hair, you know. She says, "Easy, old, my darling." And he says, "Some enchanted evening." But anyway, I told that one on Dr. Mooney. That doc ain't anonymous. I told that on Doc. And so he come back and told one on me. So he said that old Bill was coming along with his wife on a beautiful outfit. Said she had saved the money and bought him a nice looking summer suit, Easter suit, and said he had saved his money and bought his wife a beautiful Easter outfit, so they had to walk through town. And old Doc said that this beautiful girl came down the steps downtown, and she would look like she'd been poured, melted and poured into that dress, and a little already sliced out here and there, you know. And she was really dressed up. And she come down the stairs and she said, "Hello, Judge." And I said, "Good morning." And tightened my grip on my wife's arm here, you know. Walked down the street. And my wife all of a sudden stopped. She said, "And where did you meet her?" I said, "Professionally, of course." And she said, "I know that. But whose profession? Yours or hers?" But anyway, we had I was in court one day. I wasn't going to tell this, but it looked like I'm going to have to close out pretty quick. The lawyers got in the courtroom. The lawyer sat here, the lawyer sat there, and they chose the jury, and they called this woman to be a witness. She sat right here by me, and the clerk swore, and she said, "All right, proceed, gentlemen." And I grabbed the gavel and I hit it. And the lawyer got up and he said, "Hello there, young lady." He said, "How you doing?" He said, "You know me?" She said, "Yeah, I know you. You're so-and-so. Known you all your life." He said, "That's right." And furthermore, I don't know anything good about you. He said, "Yeah, I've known him all and a thief." And it was stunned, you know. Well, I was too. And I said, "Come here, fellas. Let's have a recess. Either way, I put your hand, I'm gonna put your ass in jail." But now I want to say this, and then I'm going to quit. In Orlando, black mate had come, turned up sick, and he went over there, and there was wall over the street over there. Drove up into the churchyard, little black church, but it was quite a large house. And over there, I drank it too. I don't know whether or not. Anyway, I go sick. She ran up, called Connor, and she called him out there. Connor found out, and he called the ambulance. And by that time, there was a black and all the automobile. And I either had to go in there and break up that church to get out of the way. You get if you. Clean out your well in the well, you don't know. And you don't know what a clean well is. How many of y'all ever had a cat fall in the well? Fake China. That damn well tastes like China. Well, bear tastes like China. But anyway, he only disappeared into the confines on an East Street and Eastman on Dublin the night. Two boys got A. I didn't go to A. Got me. And but that comes here and get my attention. But I'm Tigler and over there. He said, "I'm going to tell you again that if you want good clean out, you got to clean out and you get out. You have done quite what you could. You haven't cleaned and out break the ugliness out of your life." My bad. And you sure you clean out your well fit to talking to. Look at at him, reached your hand at him. I looked, shaking up. And I said, well, I'll drink in a minute. But right, I sit up of what you said. You read him, didn't you? Everybody else read him, didn't you? And didn't you? It's stupid. And you 111 pounds. 6 foot 2 inches tall. And I apologized to the crowd. I said, I'm sorry y'all did talk. He said, well, you didn't hear him say anything. I said, well, I took a little drink. I would go out in the valley and finish. I'd die comfortable. But his hand on the other jerk, they have to take nothing. And it helped. You know, he said, you're dying, Boots. Tell me, and I don't happen to me. I know I have been the doctor, the prescription. Said, you have on our head. I said, sir, I knew that he knew something that I didn't know, that I wanted to know. And he said, take me and die happy. Do without me and die in holy terror. That's what you're going to do. So I got up and I staggered to the door. And then I thought about, why am I going with these fellows? They asked me to come and walk with them. I asked you why I went with them. The preacher, the last of liquor, and then my request to go with them. And I got to the door, and I said, am I a fall guy? What am I? I was suspicious-natured anyway. The lawyer by trade and profession. So I just wonder, looked at any gift horse, you ought to look them in the mouth. So I decided I'd stop. And I just stopped right there at the door. And they said, come on, Bill, ain't you going with us? And then I busted out laughing. I said, now what in the hell have I got that they want? I didn't know that they had the love of God in their hearts, the love of another human being in their hearts. I had no way of knowing that. But I did know that I didn't have a damn thing. And I thought, I started laughing. And I thought about, how much have I got? I lacked $5,000 for having a damn nickel. I lacked $5,000 of having a nickel in my name. And I went up there that night, and those boys, clean, shaven, bathed, smelling like a laundry, and there I was, filthy, unshaven, unhair-cutted. I had been about 2 months, 3 months since I had a haircut, 4 or 5 days since I've had a shave. And I had one of them old blades that you run inside of a blade, inside of a water glass, and you mash it round and sharpen that blade to get it sharp. And then I had these things to come. Then all of a sudden, I thought about, my God, how many people, Lohan Mashi, how many people are in Mashi? So, I worked and I got naturally a little bit, I felt better when I had my bath. I felt better when I had something to eat. They fed me. They clothed me. Now, they didn't give me no Levi's. Nothing that good, you know. They just gave me some old second-hand clothes. But it was clean. And I loved it. And I loved those people for doing it. And all of a sudden, I began to love people. I began to realize that it was my fault. Maybe my fault. Maybe my fault alone. Maybe my fault and then somebody else's fault. My wife had quit me. She had long since quit me. Then all of a sudden I realized that God Almighty was good to me. And I just believed that He would be the salvation. But anyhow, I began to feel like a human being before long, and I met that good gal back yonder. She come up there one day and she said, I need a good lawyer. I said, I'm the best in town. And she said, I haven't got much money. I said, it don't take much money to be a good client. And I'll make you a good lawyer. So I met her and married her. We got two kids. 1 6 foot 2, 1 6 foot 4. One's traveling now for a pharmaceutical company in Atlanta. The other one's in Austin, Texas. He's married and in the Navy. I got some boot when the marriage. I married a widow with three children. And I got 7 grandchildren by that junction. And those 2 boys, 5 children. And got 1 grandbaby. And got the same wife I had, been married 30 years to her. Which shows that with liquor, you ain't got much chance. Without liquor, anybody, if I can make a go of it. Now, I've told you my story, and I want to read you something, if I can read it. The name of it, Something Worthwhile. Now, there is something worthwhile in this old world. There's no skill in easy sailing when the skies are clear and blue. There's no joy in doing things which anyone else can do. But there is some satisfaction that's mighty sweet to take when you reach a destination that they said you'd never make. The old drag on society, the old people who embarrassed the decent people, the drunk people, I didn't mean to say old people, just the decent people, those are the people that count the most. And God knows I love them. But there is some sweet satisfaction to take when you reach a destination that they said you'd never make. I've had people walk by me on the street, pull their little girls up to the skirts, and step down on the curb because I was unmanageable traveling down the highway. Step off the curb and say, no, you can't go that close to him. He's a drunk. And I had one lady, she said, your son, you quit misbehaving or else you're going to look like him when you get grown. And I'll tell you, that hung in his gut. But anyway, God love you. I do. And thank you so much for listening to me.